Yeah. All right. Well, hello everybody, and thank you so much for coming. And I think it is amazing that we are sitting, in my case, standing, in this room above a pub where Bowden himself used to stand and speak above this very pub. Many years after he has died, in order to talk about his influence and in order to, it is a testimony to the extraordinary nature of man. And Damien Thompson, who is the associate editor of The Spectator, who wrote a review of my book, noted, he told me when I interviewed him, he was such an unforgettable person. And I think that this sums him up. Now, I didn't meet him. I can't emphasize that enough. There's only one of us on this panel.
Yes.
That actually knew him. Well, Eddie, if you could come and sit in your seat, that would be great. And I stress that I am so grateful to Adrian and to Eddie. Particularly to Eddie, actually, because I was constantly text messaging him. I mean, I was literally text messaging him at sort of 2 a.m. I would think of things that I didn't know about, and I would message Eddie, and Eddie would text me back. I mean, I had a constant text correspondence with Eddie about Bowden. But I didn't know him, so if Bowden is Jesus, the beginning of St. Matthew and St. Luke. and I am perhaps St. Paul with regard to John Bowden. And I genuinely don't think that is an exaggeration. Because I have had a great deal of negative feedback about my book from people who, frankly, worship Jonathan Bowden, who see Jonathan Bowden, Adrian and myself, when we were at the TGB conference in October, we talked about the Bowden of faith and the real Bowden. We also talk about Jesus in that way. And the reason we do that is because Bowden has inspired this, how long do we speak about it?
As long as you want to.
Bowden has inspired and this reaction, and this brings me back to what Damien Thompson of The Spectator said about him being an unforgettable person. And what is it to be an unforgettable person? In some sense, all of us are unforgettable people. We're all unique. We all have our own stories, our own ways that we've negotiated life. But there's something about some people, there's some power that some people have. Some power that some people have to make a cold world feel warm again. Or to take ideas from all over the place and distill them into something that makes sense. That is a very powerful and unusual quality. And I think that's what Bowden had. I don't think he had a particularly original philosophy. But he was able to syncretize the philosophies of other people, Nietzsche, for example, Heraclitus, whatever, and bring them together in a way that was understandable to his audience. And not just understandable to his audience, because that could be dry, but exciting, inspiring. He had a way with words. I've never met him, I never personally experienced this. But some people that have done so felt that it was almost like a religious experience. For example, when he was in Atlanta in 2009, and Adrian told me, he did a speech which was so enrapturing on a level of Billy Graham, on a level of the best speakers we know, that people cannot believe that this was not recorded, but it was not recorded. And it brought people to a kind of a sense that it's all going to be okay. That we, all of us in this room, we live in this fucking clown world. This insanity where men can say they're women and be women in sports. Where we can't say that we're English because it's racist. Where we can't say that, look, all of us, or at least most of us, with the exception of the Lithuanian over there, in this room, are descendants of Edward III, and that we are an extended genetic family, and that we are one people. We are a family in this room. And that we, as a family, have certain interests and certain desires and a certain sense of love. And we can't say this. And he was able to distill this through his intelligence, through his verbal dexterity. I am deliberately, by the way, not using notes, because it's bound and we want it. It's bound and didn't use notes. And frankly, it's bloody difficult. And I wish I had notes. I'm sure they can react to all kinds of nonsense. And I'm sorry about that. But he was able to do this. When I spoke to friends of his, he has this gift, to be able to take certain ideas, to make connections. And that's what a part of intelligence is about, to be able to make connections. Imagine being able to make connections between Judge Dredd and Nietzsche. That's what Bowden would do. Imagine being able to make connections with Hawaii 5-0, which was his favourite television programme, by the way, and Cat. That's what Bowden could do. And it's, there's something about that is very inspiring. So if we refer back to Max Weber, you got your hamburger, are you okay? I am told that Bowden, at a particular event, somebody else ordered a hamburger, but he was so tight-fisted that he said, the hamburger's mine, and then he consumed the hamburger without paying.
He's paid for this.
That's very bound to have a hamburger here and to say thank you very much and to just take it in.
Thank you.
But this is the ability he had. He was what Weber calls a charismatic. And what a charismatic is able to do is take people who are in a world that feels cold, that feels unstable, that feels strange, like a shaman. And that's why I called the book Shaman of the Radical Right. And via certain abilities that they have to bring them into their own world and say, make their world warm, make their cold world warm, and tell them that it's all going to be okay in the end. The clown world in which we have lived since Tony Blair came to power will all be okay in the end, and that there is some profound sense in which even if civilization is collapsing due to all of the decadence and nonsense by which we all know we are surrounded, it's all going to be okay in the end. And that is what Bowden was able to do. If we compare it again to the biblical metaphor, I hadn't even heard of Bowden until 2015. And I was at the London Conference on Intelligence, and there was a chap called, who introduced me to Bowden. And then I got back to Finland, and I Googled him, and he was talking about the Julius Evola. And I thought, good God, he has explained this to me in an interesting way, in a fascinating way, in an inspiring way, and I don't have to bother ploughing through Julius Evola's book, which frankly is badly written, quite boring. But Mick Brooks, that was the chap's name that introduced me to him. But he has distilled this down to its essence, and I have imbibed it like a pint of ale, and I get it, and that's great. And then I started looking at more of his speeches, and more of his speeches, and more of his speeches, and then I discovered he died. And he was only 49 years old. And that's an element of charisma. What is charisma? Charisma is power to take you from your ordinary world to a different world, a world where everything means something, a world where everything makes sense. Now, how was he able to do that? He had the gift of the gab. He could articulate complicated, difficult things in a few phrases. We're not sorry! We're not sorry! Or whatever it happens to be. He was able to do that. He took tremendous risks, and sometimes those risks didn't pay off. This is evidence in his fiction, in his writing. I mean, I may well be writing a second book about this, by the way. But on many levels, it's not very good. If you've read his fiction, it's a reflection of probably schizophrenia, of various traits, of autism, of traits in him. It's not very good. He took risks. They didn't pay off. But at least he took the risks. And that's something that is attractive. There's evidence that we attach ourselves to people that have what's called an identifiable flaw. It makes us bond with them more. Because we all have flaws. He was short and fat and not very good looking. This is an idea. All of us have identifiable flaw. He had this identifiable flaw. And this helps to create a bond between him and the audience. But most importantly, he died. And he died young. He was not even 50. He was 49 years old, like Jesus dying at 33, dying young and dying suddenly. There is many studies on this indicate that it means that you bond more with the community and you become more of the essence of the community. So he had this charismatic power. Now, what is charisma? What is it to be a charismatic person, to be an original thinker? Let's reduce this down after science. Doing well in life is predicted by being intelligent, and Bowden was intelligent. He got A's in most of his O-levels, for example, and he got A's in all his A-levels. He was a highly intelligent person, intelligent, and a certain kind of personality. This is to say that you are high in conscientiousness, that is rule following and impulse control, and you are high in agreeableness, that is altruism and empathy, and you are low in neuroticism, that is to say, you are mentally stable. Now, overall, if you have high intelligence and you are high in the traits that I just mentioned, you will do well in life. You will do well. You will be the doctor or barrister or the whatever. You will do well in life. But you won't get to the very heights of life. You won't be at the very top. Because the very top is outlier high intelligence combined with antisocial traits and psychopathic traits. Narcissistic traits, and it is those people that reach the very top. Now, if we look at Bowden, let's look at his intelligence. I'm saying he was extremely intelligent, but he failed a little maths. Many of you in this room will be old enough to remember O levels. So put your hand up, who can remember O levels? And who failed O-level maths? Did you? Yeah. Maybe you're a genius.
I've been out.
Tony over there did not. Bowden got a D in O-level maths. But in almost everything else, he got an A. So you have this obscure intelligence. You have this fact, which is very, very intelligent, and the constant manifold between the different components of intelligence breaks up. So therefore, your intelligence becomes very skewed, and his was extremely linguistically skewed. He was highly linguistically intelligent, but he failed O-level maths. So you have that component of it. The second component of genius is that if you are low in agreeableness, then you know, you are original, fascinating ideas going to offend the vested interests, but you don't care. In fact, you might even be so autistic that you don't realize that your ideas will offend other people. And in fact, you might be so low in agreeableness that you don't even care. In fact, you might quite like offending other people. And maybe that is what we are dealing with Bowden. Conscientiousness, impulse control. You can think outside the box. You can think ideas that are unthinkable to ordinary people. And mental instability, being neurotic, means that you are thinking all the time. You are worrying all the time. You are concerned all the time. And also, the world is a frightening and unpleasant place, and so you want to make sense of it. You want to understand how it works. And this is what I think we are dealing with Bowden. Now, it's about 50% to do with environment, and it's about 50% to do with genetics. And Bowden's environment was the kind of suboptimal environment that would force this through. Bowden was born in 1962 to a very reasonable father who was a bank manager and so forth, and to a mother who, by all accounts, appears to have been a schizophrenic. And he told a very good friend of his that he was in every position with his mother you could imagine, except sexual. His mother used to lie about when she was born. His mother ultimately was diagnosed with schizophrenia and went mad. So his mother died when she was 48 years old, and Bowden was only 15. Imagine, do any of you in this room have experienced a parent dying at a very young age, when you seem to be everything. I mean, right, and presumably this is very hard.
It was horrible. Especially in adolescence when there's so much going on in the body, it's a very miserable time anyway. I can empathise with Roland, with Jonathan.
Absolutely. So it's very difficult thing to get through. When I was nine, my mother had meningitis, and she almost died. I remember my father coming up to me on Christmas Day, 89. Mummy had meningitis. I remember saying, but you can die of that. I remember running out of my bedroom. I remember nothing else of the day. But she didn't die. Your mother did die.
Yeah.
And grandfather did die. And think about how that will treat, what does that say to you about life? Life is unpredictable. Life is not a safe place, maybe. Life is hard. And that's what he experienced at 15. It's amazing, really, that at 16 he did so well in his GCSEs. In his O-levels, I'm sorry. But that's a big thing in his life. And at that time, he got to know David Thompson, as I said, and he was very much an introvert, very much a sort of autistic introvert. But he gradually came out of himself, and he was very happy that the Conservatives won the 1979 election. This was a big thing. And he went to a conference in Sheffield of the Conservative students that were shut down by Norman Tebbit. So this is where he started in the Conservative Party. And then the problem is that he failed his A-levels, so he had to retake his A-levels at Bracknell College, and he did excellently, by the way. He got two A's and an extension paper, which got the highest grades you could possibly get. And then he went to Birkbeck College, London, and he dropped out after the year, and then he spent time informally at the Polytechnic of North London in English literature and so forth. And it seems that around about this time he had a breakdown. He had some kind of breakdown. He was mentally unstable. It seems he had depression, these kind of things. And then he went to Cambridge, and then he dropped out of Cambridge after term, and then suddenly he emerged. And I think Nina has a copy, there we go, of his first book, Mad. And he kind of self-published, really, many, many books, all of them very, very short. And then he got involved in the Monday Club. And then, I'm not here to talk about, you can read in the book the various political groups that he got involved in. Now, one thing that emerges, and one thing that I was criticized for, when I published the biography, and it started actually when, in about 2021, was it, Adrian? I interviewed you, and I interviewed Gregory as well, on my channel, Jolly Heretic, about Bowden, was that he was a compulsive liar. So he would say, for example, that he was married with five children. To the extent that he would get friends of his, he had a P.O. box that he would give people rather than dressing. And friends of his would send birthday presents and Christmas presents to these children. And they didn't exist. He would say that he had graduated from Cambridge, which he had not. He had dropped out after a year. And he would say that his mother had committed suicide, Eddie told me. And this was back up to somebody else, which was not true. She died of heart failure and celiac disease. And at every level, he would just lie. He would compulsively lie on all kinds of things. he would say he was a millionaire when in reality he lived in a caravan, in a caravan park in Redmond. Now, if you go back to the early 90s, he's telling, he's proud that he lives in a caravan park in Redmond. And a number of people went round to his caravan where he had a big book collection, and he was proud of it. Oh, don't waste money on a house. You know, what's the point? But no, by the time he is in his 40s, he's lying and saying he's a billionaire, and he's telling people to drop him off somewhere, they can't see that he lives in a caravan, and all this kind of stuff. Now, I have been criticised a great deal for revealing this, for publicising this, but it must be understood, this is, in a sense, the flip side of genius. I did a book many years ago about J. Philippe Rushton. Does anyone know of him? J. Philippe Rushton?
Yes, I do.
Right.
I'm very frightened. I have a photograph taken of him, Lord
Shelton. Right.
So scared he was to be associated with the
West. J. Philippe Rushton came up with the concept. He argued, he showed proof that there are racial differences in life history strategies. The black people are evolved to a fast life history strategy. They live fast and die young. The East Asians are evolved to a slow life history strategy. They live slow and die old. And the white people are in the middle. And I was asked to write his biography, and I found, you know, what he was saying, by the way, was extremely controversial at the time. Consistent with having very high intelligence and high psychology. And I showed, well, look, his life, he was married three times, he had children by four different women, he used to beat up one of his wives. He was a high-functioning psychopath. But that doesn't undermine his bravery, his associated being a high-functioning psychopath. And you have to take the good with the bad. And this person had positive qualities, which that he was intellectually brave, that he didn't mind upsetting people, that he broke the rules in pursuit of truth. There were all of these kinds of things that were good about him, such that he produced these very influential works, such as his books on race differences and so forth. But as an individual, he was a quite unpleasant man. And this you get again and again when you look at genius. People that are geniuses, they have a sense of mission, they have the sense of what they have to do, they have this fundamental obsession with the truth, but in their social lives, they are not pleasant people. They are low in agreeableness, they're low in conscientiousness, they are mentally unstable. And this is what Phil Rushton was like. Jonathan Bowden, in many ways, was similar, though I should emphasize that unlike Phil Rushton, it seems from those to whom I talked, I've got to remember that Adrian here knew him and Eddie knew him, and I didn't know him, that he had a very sensitive side, a very kindly side, a very loving side. But he was kind of like that. And you get, you deal with your insecurities, your negative feelings, your feelings that you're worthless, which may well be induced by having a schizophrenic mother, I don't know. By telling yourself that you're the best, by telling yourself that you're important, by telling yourself that you're wonderful. And then you deal with that by lying, by being deceptive, by exaggerating your own importance. And that's what he did. And many years ago, I wrote a biography, of Herbert Snape Kinnersley, who was Churchill's prep school headmaster. And that this then verged into Churchill. And Churchill is semi-worshipped in this country. And Churchill was a liar. And Churchill was an exaggerator. And Churchill was in many ways very similar to Bowden. So you've got to, and he was short and fat. I love it. Right. So I'm not, this is not a condemnation of Bowie. This is the nature of the kind of people that inspire us. What do you think Rasputin was like? Do you think he was honest? Or do you think that he exaggerated things, he lied? Of course he exaggerated things, of course he lied. And there's a certain kind of person that has certain kinds of qualities that can inspire us and bring us to the heights of feeling that it's all going to be okay. It's all going to be okay. It's all going to be okay. Because they have no impulse control. Because they have no agreeableness. Because they have a narcissistic sense and they want it to be applauded. Because all of these things. So they will be liars. They will be dishonest. And it is from that that could bring us to these heights. What was Moses like? What was Jesus like? And I think we're here today because Bowden was like that. He had this these inspirational qualities, and it's worth understanding where they come from. And there are negative sides to that, such as being a fantasist, such as lying, such as whatever. So it shouldn't, as it were, remove the Bowden magic. I think someone said that online. Remove the Bowden. The Bowden magic wouldn't exist without these other qualities. I would be amazed if a person had this magic without these negative qualities. But there was something about him, I suspect a big part of it was that he was utterly traumatized by his mother's death. And this allowed him to enter a sort of alternative universe in many ways. He talked about being a mediumistic speaker, to dissociate and to inspire people. The clown world will end in the end. And I think it is ending. I think there is a reaction, finally, against what's happening. And I think Bowden is part of that. Now, I was born in 1980. Some of you are older than me. and some of you are a lot younger than me. And those of you that are a lot younger than me seem to have found this person who is very memeable, whose ideas can be encapsulated into a meme and can be and can be spread. Well, when I first came, I was 20 years old. And was my mentor. And can inspire them. And this is what's happening. And it's assisting to move things against the anti-truth regime that we've been in for the last 30 years. So I think that whatever lies he told, whatever insecurities he had, what he has achieved is quite extraordinary. It's quite extraordinary that a person who overtly, you might think, oh, he's mad. He's a madman. He's crazy. But yet we have people like Michael Gove and people like Damien Thompson and what really, I don't mean to exaggerate it, Nina, but what really made me think, okay, I'm going to write this, is that I was at a meeting of Unheard in September, and lovely Nina here, I met her for the first time, and she just looked at me and then revealed from her bag, in a coquettish fashion, extremists studied in metapolitics, and there was Doc Bowden on the cover with revolvers in his hand, and I thought to myself, God, Nina Power, yeah, I've heard of her. If she's into Bowden, how influential must he be? And this inspired me to start writing the book. And I went back to Finland and I immediately got on the phone to Nick Griffin. And then from Nick Griffin, somebody else, and then Tony Lickener over there, and then Adrian, and then Eddie, and then all a number of you in this room. And then it just kind of off I go, and then within 3 months I had written it. So I think it shows you how influential he was. So despite his flaws, I think this is a person that is inspiring on an incredible level, and that is why we're here. And so thank you so much for coming, and I hope it this helps to, you know, explore why we all feel how we do, and so on. And so cheers, chap.